You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous, gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. I think you will be, too, and I hope you make a habit out of it and come back each and every time. A couple of quick things. First, I've gotten a couple of emails, people saying, you know, I want to subscribe to the K-Files e-zine, but I can't figure out how to do it. Well, you go to my website. There are three links on that website where you can subscribe. One of them is in red letters right under the big gray box that says Listen Live. Right under that in red letters, it says K-Files e-zine. Then, of course, when all else fails, there's the menu. It's on the menu. And then at the bottom of the page, there's a text menu, and it's there too. So click one of those three links, and you can subscribe. I've also gotten several emails asking me, because tomorrow is a big day here in the United States. It is the inauguration of a new president. And I've gotten a few emails wanting to know if, in fact, we are going to be broadcasting live tomorrow night. Yes. Of course we will, and I hope you'll be here for that. Now, tonight is going to be, I think, a very, very interesting and informative show. My guest tonight is John Lear. John Lear is, I think, probably one of the best-known names in the realm of UFO information and the realm of any information having to do with things in the air and things in space. And I think it's safe to say that, and I don't think he would disagree with this, that he has been cast in the light of being very controversial at times because of the information that he shares. And there are people who think that information either should not be shared or for whatever reason, they decide they don't want to hear it, and they don't want you to hear it, etc. But he's going to be joining us in just a few minutes, just 2 or 3 minutes here, after our first break. John Lear is not someone who just says things without any sort of credible pedigree, I guess you could say. He is a former airline pilot with over 19,000 hours. He holds several aviation records. He has flown covert missions, secret missions, for agencies of the U.S. government. He has been an outspoken revealer of information about UFOs and extraterrestrials and all manner of information about the moon and Mars and space exploration. And he's been involved in attempting to get information out to the public. Some of what you're going to hear tonight, you may find incredible. That's what this show is about. This show is about bringing you the information so that you can ask the questions and make up your own mind. Well, you get a chance tonight with John Lear right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is John Lear. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be here.
John, I spent the afternoon watching some videos, various videos where you have been interviewed, and found them absolutely fascinating. I want us to get into some of the same topics. I actually already had them written down, but I want to make sure that my audience is up to speed on some of this. Over the years, John, you've revealed some pretty startling news about the UFO phenomenon and about space exploration. Well, right now, there's news coming out of NASA that itself is pretty startling. And it seems to be sort of edging closer to maybe some type of disclosure. So I want us to get into that just a little bit in just a little while. But first, as sort of a basis, I'd like for us to get into what you've said about when we actually went to the moon and when you say we went to Mars.
Okay, now let me make one thing clear here, Kevin, is my opinions are only good until 12 midnight. And then after that, they may change because the information comes to me. If I find satisfactory information that, that says that that's wrong, I will change it and I will say, look, I gave you some bum information. Here's now what I think. Mm-hmm. People that say, well, wait a minute, John, 2 weeks ago you said, da-da-da-da-da, and I'll say, yeah, that's right, because that's what I believed 2 weeks ago. But now I believe different.
That's fair enough. Because, you know, all of us are in that position, because as new data comes to us, it may put a whole different light on what we thought we knew.
Okay, now regarding the moon, at one time I thought that we had been there and had gone there, and I thought that we had gone earlier than the alleged Apollo missions, and I also thought we went to Mars. Now I'm pretty firmly convinced that we didn't go anywhere. We are locked on Earth or prevented from going anywhere other than low Earth orbit by the Van Allen Belt, which extends from about 460 miles to about 25,000 miles, and no human can go through that. Mechanical things can, satellites, photographs, camera missions, stuff like that. And they've been there. Now, we've taken pictures of the moon, the Lunar Orbiter series, the Clementine series, we have some great pictures of that. But as far as man, nobody went there. The Apollo mission was a $30 billion hoax. Nobody ever went. The reason they did that hoax is, number one, they didn't have the capability of actually going to the moon, and number two, they needed something to build up the credibility of the United States of America in the world's eyes. And this going to the moon was a fantastic scenario. But no, it didn't happen. We didn't go there. We didn't orbit it, and nobody landed there.
In the before I move on to the next area of exploration, what is it that has brought you to this opinion? What made you change your mind about going to the moon?
In March of last year, a friend of mine, Ron Schmidt, who's Zorgon on all the websites and who has done some incredible research, and who runs thelivingmoon.com, to which I'm a contributor, sent me two of the landing videos of the Apollo missions. And I believe the videos were 14, 15, and 17. He said, John, what do you think of these? And that's all he said. So I had never really looked at the landing videos, and I was what you call an Apollo hugger all my life. I believe it went. There's no reason to believe it didn't. I knew several of the astronauts. John Glenn signed my flight pilot logbook, and Alan Shepard I took him to a place in Los Angeles in a Learjet, and when we landed, he said, "John, you're my hero." And the reason he said that is because I always put the airplane on the first 50 feet of the runway like the Navy pilots do. And, of course, Alan Shepard was Navy, so I was his hero because it was a pretty short runway, and it's pretty awkward sitting in the back of an airplane with a pilot that you don't know his capabilities, and you're going into a short runway like that. But anyway, I knew a couple of the astronauts, and I believe the program went no doubt about it, hook, line, and sinker. I was an Apollo hugger. So anyway, with that in mind, Ron sent me over those videos. And I look at them, 14, 15, and 17, and I was shocked. I was so shocked that I felt sick at my stomach, and I quickly pulled up the other ones, 11, 12, and 16. And I had all six there. And I looked at them, and they were just unbelievably fake. Number one is the dialogue is fake. Now, I'm a pilot, and I know how pilots talk. Astronauts talk in a similar way, and it was just as if they were reading a script. Now, what they do in these, each video is about 5 to 6 minutes long, and what they do is they're edited versions of coming down from 60 miles where they were. Well, the problem is they were using the video of that fake moon they have down at Langley, which is about 22 feet in diameter. And there's several pictures of that fake moon, and they have pictures of artists drawing craters on it and everything. And they used that fake moon for a lot of things, but they apparently also used them to simulate the lunar landings. And these videos are of the shadow of a craft landing on this fake moon. And the problem is, when they descend from 60 miles to 1 foot, there doesn't happen to be any change in the diameter of the crater as you're looking at this fake moon. In other words, if it's one finger wide at 60 miles, it'll be one finger wide when he gets down to the moon. So anyway, it was it was an incredible blow to look at this and say, "Oh my God, I've made a mistake. I believe that Apollo went." So I went back and started researching all the other things I believed about the Apollo mission, and I had thrown in the ash can that book "We Never Went to the Moon" by the guy that worked at Rocketdyne, what's his name, Bill Casing, and I got that out. I ordered that because I didn't have a copy of it, and I went through the information that he had because, you know, I, like everybody else, I thought he was a nut. What do you mean we never went to the moon? I saw it. I saw all the mission control things and the tapes and Apollo 13, where we nearly lost the craft and the whole thing. But as I went to backtrack, I realized that it was all a hoax. We never went there. And the way they pulled it off is they probably had 100 guys out of the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that worked on the program. Only 100 guys knew it was fake. And I'm not sure exactly how they pulled the lunar landings off, but what I think is they had it all on tape. They had all the missions on tape, so even the guys in mission control thought it was real. And what we saw is what you and me as the public saw was the Saturn V take off from Cape Kennedy and blast off into the air, and American flags waving and everything, and that's the and that's the only thing we saw after that with our own eyes, other than being on the stuff on TV, was the landing with the three parachutes and the astronauts getting out of the command modules floating in the sea. So started researching that, and apparently, according to Bill Casing, he had at least one pilot that witnessed the Apollo 11 command module being pushed out of the back of a large cargo airplane about the time this pilot was flying over the area, about the time that Apollo 11 was supposed to splash down into the sea. So everything comes together now of it being a hoax. We have Neil Armstrong, who went into exclusion into teaching as a university professor and didn't say much. He said maybe a couple of words. I think he was on 60 Minutes once, and he also did a short speech at the 25th anniversary of the Apollo landing at the White House. Very interesting little speech. I think it was like 300 words. But pretty much he's kept to himself and hasn't said much. And I suppose this is why. The same thing with Buzz Aldrin, the same thing with most of the astronauts. One of the most interesting things I found out is none of the, as the Apollo astronauts, have never had a reunion. Now, you'd think that, you know, the first guys on the moon, the first six crews on the moon, would get together every once in a while, you know, like the Doolittle Raiders, and celebrate what their accomplishments were. But they've never had one single celebration together. Now you say, well, how did they bring the astronauts into it? I don't know, except that I do know that mind control has been very, very well developed ever since World War II. It was a significant development by the Germans, and then when they came over and infiltrated the United States, some of that technology was used, and it's been put to very, very good use. So exactly what they told the astronauts, how they made them participate, how they performed the mind control, I don't know exactly. I have little theories, but the fact is, yes, they were brought into it. Whether they were brought into it voluntarily or not, I don't know. But, you know, several of the astronauts, Buzz Aldrin had some psychological problems, did some serious drinking for 7 years after the moon mission. There was really no explanation for that. There's some very interesting stories about his battle with this. And, of course, a few astronauts have been killed. I'm not saying that they were killed, but they certainly passed away, and some under mysterious circumstances. But anyway, it all boils down to this, Kevin, is that we never went to the moon.
All right. Now, some of the stuff coming from NASA is pretty interesting. Related to that, right now, there's a big buzz about, you know, trying to get ready to go back to the moon. And a whole new spacecraft, they say it'll be like Apollo on steroids. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I thought, well, if Apollo got us there before, why wouldn't Apollo get us there now? The reason is quite that gets offered up by people who, as you say, we didn't go to the moon. The reason that I've heard is, well, they have to have a spacecraft that can withstand the radiation, which we didn't have with Apollo, and so it's they're having to reinvent the wheel here. Also, there's an interesting article that came out. I saw it last week. It could be older, but I saw it last week, where NASA is saying that because of the sun being so quiet and the solar cycle not being what they expected, that this actually could be dangerous for astronauts and could prevent them from going back to the moon. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they're going to find all kind of excuses not going back to the moon. I've read the stories that they've gone back and looked for the technology of the Saturn V and the spacecraft, and they can't find it. It's like, you know, well, where'd you put the drawings, you know? And they can't find that. Well, the simple reason is, you know, they never got it to the point that it could go to the moon. Now, we have to remember, Virgil Grissom was one of the crew members on Apollo 1, and he was very outspoken. Every time he got a chance, he would tell the press, look, and he'd point to Apollo 1. This thing ain't going to the moon in 2 years. This is like in 1967. This thing ain't going to the moon in 2 years. This thing ain't going to the moon in 10 years. And, of course, I accuse NASA of murdering Virgil Grissom, White, and Chaffee, the three crew members that were with him when the spacecraft burned up on January 27, 1967, along with a secret astronaut. Now, I say secret astronaut because there was a secret astronaut corps that was trained along with them that were involved in a secret joint U.S.-Russian space effort that was completely different from the Russian missions and the U.S. missions, and they did a completely separate thing. But anyway, while they were launching and getting ready for the Apollo launches, they had some of these secret astronauts sit in. And they would sit down by the equipment bay under the seats. I've heard people, when I tell this story, people say, well, I've seen the Apollo spacecraft, and there's no way for a third person or fourth person to sit there. That's untrue. Under the couches, there was room for all the Apollo rocks to be stored. Moon rocks to be stored, and a lot of extra room down there. And what the fourth guy would do, he would be down there with an extra set of headsets and a microphone and help him work out the problems. And his head would be up on the control panel and his feet down in that area, whereas the astronauts were sitting a different way. But basically why NASA killed Virgil Grissom was to a notice to all the other astronauts, you better keep your mouth shut because it's serious and we don't want you guys saying that we're not going to the moon, because we are. And of course they weren't, but they wanted that. They didn't want to hear any noise about that. So number one is we hear that NASA is trying to overcome the problems of going to the moon now. And then I've heard this story, well, we really don't need to go to the moon now because we should go to L1. L1 is the neutral point between the Earth and the moon, where the Earth's gravity is the same as the moon. And they said, we could accomplish a lot more there, and it would simplify our effort to get to Mars. So, you know, they're going to come up to one, with one excuse after another, but the fact is they aren't going anywhere.
All right, now, wouldn't they have to fly through the Van Allen radiation belts just to get out to L1?
Absolutely. All this is just baloney, and it's going to go on and on.
All right. Now, we've got a couple of minutes here before our next break. I've heard you talk about the gravity on the moon and that there's atmosphere. Do you still hold to that position?
Absolutely. The gravity is between 68% of that of Earth and 100% of that of Earth, and also there's a breathable atmosphere. What's been interesting in the last 2 years, I've come across a book by Perry Spalter, her last name is Spolter, who wrote The Gravitational Force of the Sun, and she's absolutely put in the weeds Newton's theory that that mass is attracted to mass, that a mass it has a gravitational force of itself. It doesn't. And the way she does proves this is through Kepler's third law. Anybody who wants to buy that book, I'm sure you can pick it up at Amazon.com. But if you want the real story on gravity, it's Perry Spalter's Gravitational Force of the Sun. But she lays it out there, and she also shreds Einstein's theory of relativity, both general and special. And if you go to the livingmoon.com, I've written essays on both of those, one on the book and also on her on how she shreds Einstein's theory of relativity, and I explain it so that actually the layman can understand it. I take the high points. It's kind of a Perry Spalter for dummies.
Okay.
So, atmosphere on the moon, the gravity, of course you have to have gravity hold an atmosphere, and there's several reasons why we believe there's atmosphere and gravity.
All right. Is that something, yeah, it is. It's something that we need to explore over a period of a few minutes and give you plenty of time to explain it. But let me ask you this. Assuming that that is correct, and that there is this gravity of 68% of what we have here on Earth, all the way up to a possible 100%, and then assuming that there is an atmosphere, what would be the purpose behind telling us that's not so?
We're not supposed to believe that anybody lives up there. And, of course, there's a civilization on the moon. There's millions of people that live there on the far side. There's cities, artifacts, just all kinds of stuff that you can see in any number of places. On the livingmoon.com, we have many of places where you can go and see pictures of Copernicus on the near side and far side, and see pictures of buildings, artifacts, Alan Sturm has a book on lunanomaly.com. He has a wonderful book that shows.
We have to take a break, and we'll get into that when we come back. Folks, we'll be back more with John Lear right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host. My guest this evening is John Lear. And, John, when we had to cut away for the break, we were talking about this whole idea of the gravity on the moon, the atmosphere on the moon. I want to explore that a little bit. How do we know what the gravity is?
Well, we can we can assume. First, we have to understand that when you read Perry Spalter's book, that mass is not attracted to mass. That mass does not equal. I have a gravitational force of itself. So, if we assume that the astronauts did not go, all we have is Newton's law, which is gravitational force, which is F equals G, M1 M2 over R2, is the formula for finding out the gravity of a moon based on its density. And what mainstream science has done is hypothesized a density of the moon of 3.34 grams per centimeter cubed, which is, you know, outrageous. The way that they've hypothesized the Earth's density as I think it's 5.54 or 5.52 grams per centimeter squared, and using those, I mean centimeters cubed, and using those figures, they come out to 1/6 the gravity of Earth. But if you use the neutral point, which Wernher von Braun gave us in an interview in 1968, and which we have also learned by several of the spacecraft, and the neutral point is actually L1, and that's the point which is where the moon's gravity is equal to the Earth's gravity. If you use the Bulli-Altus-Newton a formula for reverse or for figuring out the neutral point, you come out with about 68%. And so I say it's at least 68%, but it could be more.
All right. Now, of course, as you say, gravity would have to be, you would have to have a fairly significant gravity in order to have an atmosphere. But how do we know there is a breathable atmosphere on the moon?
That's a tough one, because although we have the books from Firsoff, who wrote Strange World of the Moon, and several others that have seen evidence of gravity, it's very, very difficult to see, because if you have an atmosphere that's very, very clean, excuse me, and that doesn't have any dust particles, and that it's also very shallow, maybe in the 1 to 2, maybe 3 mile range, you're not going to be able to see this. So we have evidence of two or three people that have been to the moon, other than astronauts. Howard Menger in 1954 went, and he said when he was there that there was no problem breathing, that they were taken on a train on a tour of the moon, and they at one point they stepped out, and although it was, you know, unbearably hot, he said that there was gravity, and he had no problem breathing. Incidentally, Howard Menger is still alive. He lives down in Vero Beach. He's written several books about going to the moon. And one of the things I was interested in is the color of the sky on the moon, and which is the daytime color is yellow, or a saffron color. And I have some photos that we've had of the NASA photos of Copernicus, which are Lunar Orbiter 2162H, which shows the north face. What we did is we photoshopped the sky and put in the saffron yellow. And before putting in the saffron yellow, we emailed Howard to give us the exact color, and we gave him some colors, different colored swatches of saffron yellow, and he put an X on the one that was there, And so we have the exact color of the sky on the moon on that photo.
All right. Now, how was he able to go to the moon and avoid the radiation problems of the Van Allen belts?
The people that live on the moon came and got him. They've over the period of years, they have come down and taken thousands of people from all different countries to show them what's up there and how they do things. And there's no stated purpose of why these people are singled out or how they got picked or what the deal is, but they take them there and they get to spend about 5 or 6 days on a tour there, and then they're given a fond farewell, and they come back and they never hear from these people again.
Do you find Howard Menger's story credible?
Absolutely 100%, 100% credible. His story lines up with those of George Adamski and Truman Bethlehem and several others. And the people say, well, I find that's baloney. I say, okay, well, tell me which books you've read, and let's discuss the parts that you think is baloney. And they say, well, I haven't read any of the books. I just know it is. And, you know, they're indoctrinated in this. Somebody's responsible for keeping all this a secret, and they do a very good job. In the early 1700s, the Jesuit priests got a hold of one of the foremost up-and-coming astronomers and scientists at the time, and his name was Rudyr Boskovic from Croatia. And he made some astounding discoveries, but any of the biographies that you read, it says that he discovered that there was no atmosphere on the moon. Well, that's an odd word to use, discovered. Why wouldn't they say hypothesized or theorized? Because, you know, he didn't discover it. He's just hypothesizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay. There has been somebody all along to different people who have been great scientists, great astronomers, intervening. For instance, let's take Hansen, Andreas Hansen, Peter Andreas Hansen, who was a Danish mathematician and astronomer who did some incredible work in 1830, 1840, and 1850 on the orbits of Saturn and different other planets. And he was a member of the Planetary Society over there, or Astronomical Society. And in 1856, he gave a lecture on the fact that there might be breathable atmosphere and people who lived on the backside of the moon. And everybody really enjoyed his lecture and bought into it, 1856, until in 1870, a guy came over from the United States and started bad-mouthing him and saying all kinds of nasty things about him without one piece of evidence. In other words, not using any kind of evidence at all, but just shredded his reputation. Now, guess who that guy was? That was Simon Newcomb, who was head of the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington. He was a rear admiral. And you'll always find the Navy mixed up on all this, because the Navy is at the bottom of all this secrecy. It's not the Air Force, it's not NASA, it's not the Army, it's the U.S. Navy, and always has been.
Earlier you said, in response to my question about why would they, if there is this gravity and atmosphere, why would they want to keep that secret from us? And you said, well, because they don't want us to know there are people in cities and so forth. So let me carry it a step further and ask you, why would that be a problem to them?
Well, now, your guess is as good as mine. I always answer to that question, knowledge is power. And they don't want people knowing that that there's anybody out there. In other words, you hear NASA continually say, you know, this baloney about the other planets in our solar system. They say that that Venus is 800 degrees at the surface and clouds of sulfuric acid. That's baloney. Millions of people live on Venus, and they have a real advanced civilization thing. Same thing with Mars. Breathable atmosphere, millions of people live there. The same thing with Jupiter, Neptune, and all the other planets. Every single planet and every single satellite or moon of every planet in our solar system is populated with people just like us, humankind. Of course, they're much more advanced. But you hear about the gas giants, Jupiter and Neptune and the others. And let me tell you something. There's only one gas giant in this solar system, and that's spelled NASA, N-A-S-A. That's the gas giant we got.
Okay. Now, let's
listen. Why are we keeping it a secret? Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good one. But they are, and they do their best to. Einstein came up with this theory of relativity, special and general, basically that nothing can exceed the speed of light. That's pure baloney. Perry Spalter has proven it. A lot of other people have proven it. For instance, let's see, who's this? Science at the Crossroads by leaning over here, Herbert Dingell, Louis Essen, who was the inventor of the atomic clock. He had a disagreement. There's actually thousands of people that are in disagreement with Einstein, but for some reason, mainstream science in our society wants us to believe that Einstein's theory of relativity is true, and it's not.
Well, I have said on recent shows, there's no such thing as the laws of physics. What we call the laws of physics are merely descriptions of our current understanding of how things work. But the universe did not attend the same universities as the PhDs did, and the universe does what it does. The speed of light, assuming that it is 186,000 and some odd miles per second, assuming that's true, and assuming that that's the fastest speed that has ever been observed, that's the best you can say about it. It's the fastest speed that has been observed.
Yeah, well, Perry Spalter says there's, and she uses in her argument, three other things that exceed the speed of light, and that's anti-mesons, the Cherenkov effect, and superluminals. And if you go and read the book, it'll be worthwhile if you're interested. Get yourself really well informed of what's really going on in this universe and solar system.
One of the things that NASA has a bit of news that they've released recently is that they have discovered plumes of methane coming from the surface of Mars. Now, back in 2003. The European Space Agency announced that they had found methane in the atmosphere on Mars, and they also announced that they had found ammonia in the atmosphere of Mars. Well, methane, according to the information released at the time, can exist for up to about 400 years in the atmosphere, but the ammonia can only exist for about 6 hours. So NASA, and there was a big discussion about was this methane as a result of biological processes, ergo life on Mars, or was it due to geological? And apparently there were some scientists who said, well, it could just be deposited in the atmosphere by meteors. Well, now NASA is saying, no, it's coming from the surface. So it seems like they're inching closer to the big announcement, gee whiz, folks, look here. We found life. But it seems to me that if that's really where they were headed, it seems like they're inching closer, but they could take some big steps towards that by looking for the source of the ammonia, because that puts you within 6 hours of some event. What do you think?
Well, anything that comes from NASA, of course, is a lie, and all that it's saying about Mars is a lie to hundreds of millions of people live on Mars. They have a big exchange with other planets going on in the universe. It's all a big secret. So the pictures you see from coming from allegedly from the North Pole of Mars, it's all BS. All those pictures are either taken in Death Valley, or Devon Island up in north of Canada.
All right, let's take a break, and we will be back. I got some more questions about Mars when we come back. All right, folks, more with John Lear right after this. Thank you. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, John Lear. John, when we took the break, we were talking about the civilization on Mars and civilization on the moon. Do we have evidence of that? I mean, where do we get the information from about that?
I have several sources of information on that. It's something you have to find out for yourself. There's several places on the Internet you can go by that. But don't limit yourself to the moon and Mars. I mean, there's civilizations on every single planet and satellite in this solar system.
There are photographs from the moon. There are photographs from Mars that, for all the world, do look like cities from the air. Now, you were saying that none of those photographs are real photographs from Mars or real photographs from the moon, that they're shot elsewhere.
The moon photographs, the early ones are real, the ones from lunar orbiter. Everything from pre-1970 was real, but all the later ones, like from Clementine, the Navy project, they airbrushed those all beyond all possible belief. NASA also airbrushed the lunar orbiter pictures after 1970. They did some before 1970, but not with the great effort and diligence that they did afterwards. So if you can get a hold of anything that NASA printed prior to 1970, you got a pretty good chance of seeing some actual photos of actual buildings and artifacts on the moon. And now Mars is a different story. I'm not sure exactly what the deal is there, but there may be some photos from Mars that are real. But right about now, anything you see that they're taking now is digitized, and they only let you see what they want you to see. The alleged, and I say alleged, spacecraft by China and Japan sending back photos. First of all, I don't think those missions went. But second of all, if they did, the photos that they're showing us that they've released are old NASA photos. They aren't photos that they took. Those are old recycled NASA photos. So anybody that says, well, you know, where do we get the photos from Japan? They'll tell us the truth. That's baloney. Nobody's going to tell us the truth. NASA's hooked up everybody. Everybody considers ESA an independent agent. No, not. They're all hooked together. They all give it out the same story. And the same story is they don't want you to know the truth.
How is it that the inhabitants on the moon are able to travel through this Van Allen belt and able to bring people from Earth to the moon through the Van Allen belt? And we're not able to. And same for the ones on Mars. I would assume that they travel in space. How are they able to do it, and we're not able to?
Well, their technology is hundreds of thousands of years advanced to ours. There's no comparison to the technology. The moon, the moon is in rotational lock, which means that only one half of the moon faces Earth at all times. We're not allowed to see the far side, which is where all the stuff that I'm telling you about, the rivers and the forests and the cities and all that going on the far side. Now, the moon rotates once every 27.4 days, and that keeps it in rotational lock. Now, the fact is that couldn't happen by chance. There's no possibility that happened by accident. Somebody put the moon there, and according to some of the writings, which are detailed by Velikovsky in prehistoric times, people can remember times when there was no moon and times when there was two moons, and now we only have one moon. So sometime, and I estimate 40,000 years ago, and it may be more, maybe even less, that was when the moon was towed and placed in orbit. Now, you ask what it's doing, what they brought it there for. I believe that they are the monitors, and they are monitoring what we're doing and on Earth, being sure that we can't get beyond the Van Allen belt and spread our form of democracy anywhere else in the universe, that we stay right where we are until we can work our own emotional problems out, our emotional problems being that we wake up in the morning looking for somebody to kill.
Yeah, I have said on numerous occasions, if I was an extraterrestrial and I happened upon this planet, it wouldn't take me long to decide I didn't want to visit, because I would assume that the inhabitants, that being us, are either insane or just excessively primitive, and in either case, I would assume that they were dangerous to me.
Well, you got that right, Devin. And incidentally, before you ask your next question, I want to go back. The way we figure the neutral point is the Bulli-Altus-Newton law of inverse square. I kind of slid over that because I couldn't remember the name of it, but it's the law of inverse square that we figure out that the gravity of the moon is 68% of that of Earth. And we can do that without using the densities of the Earth or the moon. All we have to know is the neutral point and the size. So anyway, go on. Let's press on. Next question.
Yeah, when we talk about these civilizations, are these civilizations on other planets, are they having contact with each other?
Yes.
Are they trading with each other?
Yes.
And have they had contact with us at an official level?
At which level?
At an official level.
No.
Okay, so it's just been with individual humans.
With individual humans, yeah.
Why do you suspect they have had no contact with anyone on Earth at an official level?
Who would represent it? You think they'd go to some moron like President Bush?
Well, why wouldn't they pick say several countries and make contact with the leaders in several countries?
Well, because, the leaders aren't always the leaders. The leaders are just elected officials that are there for show. They're not real leaders. There's no reason why anybody should pay any attention to them. Nobody, if they went to President Bush and he came and made an announcement and said this, that, and that, probably less than 5% would believe what he had to say.
Okay, so they just make an individual contact. Are any of these are they the beings that we refer to as the Greys or the Reptilians, or are they human looking?
Yeah, all those are human looking, just like us. They talk like us. They walk like us. They eat like us. They're just tremendously more advanced. Now the Greys are a completely different subject.
Who are they?
Greys are the keepers, and they are in charge of the containers. And the containers are the bodies which contain the soul. And as the soul matures, the bodies have to be kept monitored, lube and oil, 100-mile checks, all that. And that's what the Greys do. The Greys don't have anything to do with the soul. That's on a different level. And yes, the Greys have underground laboratories on the moon, and as far-fetched as that is, as that sounds, that in fact the truth.
What are they doing in these laboratories?
Doing checkups on us. They take us from somebody will say that they had missing time for an hour and a half. Probably what happened is they were taken to the moon and checked up. There's certain things that they check. Usually they pick you up once when you're 3 years old, once when you're 7 years old, and once when you're about 13 years old. And then after that, it's as inspect as needed.
And who are they employed by? I mean, who do they answer to?
That I don't know. That's higher. That's a higher level. I don't know anything about it. Well, I know a little bit, but not enough to discuss it.
All right. Now, do they do this to people on other planets as well?
No, just this one. This is where the soul is evolving, and when we die, we have reincarnation. We come back, and we learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. When we learn how to do that, we can go out in the solar system and play with the other adults. But while we're here, we just have to learn those four lessons. Is one, live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed.
We've got 20 seconds or so. Are we ever going to be allowed to do serious space travel?
Eventually, yes.
Okay. All right, we're going to take our top of the hour break here in just a few seconds, and when we come back, I'll open the telephone lines so that you can call in and ask your questions or make your comments. I know that many of you will have questions and comments, and so we want to give you that opportunity. Those of you outside the United States and outside of Canada can use our flash message feature. Just go to my homepage, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message. We'll be back right after this. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, second hour. For those of you who are just now tuning in, you need to know that my guest this evening is John Lear. And we're talking about all manner of strange stuff, things that I doubt you will hear very many places. There are a few, but that's what this show is all about. I want to open up the telephone line and make sure that our folks can call in. John, let me get you to expound just for a moment on your views about this Planet X Nibiru 2012 story.
My personal opinion, that's all baloney. There's no Planet X. There's no Nibiru. All of that is just the government's way of keeping us in a constant state of anxiety and fear so that we can't live our lives normally and without anxiety. And they come up with that stuff. And you're going to see it more and more as we approach 2012. And I suspect that NASA will have some beautiful pictures of Planet X. And, you know, the government has some real, real good high-tech holographic equipment, and I suppose they'll, you know, make a holograph in the sky of Planet Nibiru for whatever they want to do, and I don't know what they want to do, but all that stuff is just pure baloney.
So you have absolutely no confidence at all in the stories of the existence of this Planet X?
None. It's ridiculous.
All right. Now, I'm particularly interested in this. There are ancient civilizations that apparently talk about this other planet. What do you think about those writings?
Fine. You know, we'll wait and see if they come along. I just don't think they will.
You know, the thing that I tell folks about it is that I don't think 2012 is going to be any different than any other year, we may have some big calamities or something. Those come along from time to time. But I don't think it's going to be anything. It's not going to be an earth-busting calamity, and that we're going to live through it.
You're 100% correct.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello there, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario. John Lear, it is a pleasure to speak with you.
Hey, thanks, Guy.
What I want to talk about is that I think NASA and the quote-unquote powers that be may have known about Mars, I would say as far back as the 1950s, perhaps as far back as 1958, because if there's a... it all begins with a comic strip from 1958, but it's called The Face on Mars.
Where I remember seeing that.
Pardon?
I remember seeing that.
You remember seeing that, right? Yeah. And I'm also looking at a photo from from 1937 from Malik Shah, Iran, a close-up view of the Tepe taken from an altitude of approximately 350 meters, where it shows the exact same kind of plateau that the face on the real face on Mars would be built upon, as if, and it is a face that is on Earth, but it's a bit eroded from the weather conditions here on Earth. But you can see the same things in both places.
All right. You have another question or comment?
John. What do you think about the Indigo Star and Crystal Children today, and how they might fit into the picture of perhaps our souls or consciousness that is evolving? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I don't follow that too much.
Okay, John. You said you don't. I don't follow the Indigo Children that much. Okay. Fair enough. All right, folks, your questions, your comments are certainly welcome. We would love to hear from you if you have a question or a comment for John Lear.
I have to a couple of my friends.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to give a warm welcome to my friends at Open Minds, especially Ross, who is Lone Wolf there, and those two special morons, Reality Design and Malcor. And also at American Conspiracy, to my friends Ducky Zorgon, and another couple of morons there, Rasabassi420 and Mojo. And also to my good friend Alan Sturm at Lunomaly.com in Tucson. And a shout-out to my friends at the CIA Vacuum Cleaner Forum. They know who they are. So do we have any more on the line?
Yeah, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Doug in your support room. How are you?
Outstanding, Doug. How are you?
Not bad, thank you.
Good.
John, great to have you on the show. You're a featured guest on the web that a lot of people like to click on your site. I have a question here. Many people have looked at photos that have been proposed to be the photos of buildings on Mars, on the moon that were taken with the people who, like the NASA people. I don't know if you've seen those photos. Are they actually factual?
Are they what?
Are they factual photos?
Oh, yeah. The buildings on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got some great ones on thelivingmoon.com, but if you want to see some equally great ones, go to lunomaly.com. That's lunomaly.com. And they've got 200 or 300 of photos that are colorized. And what's good about Lunomaly is they show you the exact photograph number that you can download from any source that you want and see exactly what they have colorized. And, of course, they've enlarged it. You'll need an enlarging program, but you'll be able to see just what they're pointing out. And there's hundreds and hundreds of artifacts all over the moon. Now, Lunomaly, most of theirs are on the far side, but there are also a lot on the near side.
I saw a report once where there was it showed that there has been many missions to the moon, and most of them are centered on the back side of the moon. And just before I hang up and take the rest of the comments on the air here, I'd like to know if you can expound on the possibility that perhaps our civilization has mistaken the UFO entities as gods over the years. And I'll take the answer off the air. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Kevin, could you repeat his question?
Can you expound upon what you think about the possibility that UFO, I guess you could say occupants, pilots, have been mistaken by our ancient ancestors as gods?
Oh, absolutely. That's absolutely correct. And that was their intent. In early civilization was to present themselves as God and give us a list of do's and don'ts like the Quran and the Ten Commandments to start us off as a viable civilization.
Do you think that some of what is described, for instance, both in the Quran and in the Bible as angels, do you think that perhaps those are some of these UFO occupants?
Of course.
Now, what would be the purpose of? If they are so advanced, what would be the purpose of them installing on this planet various religions that end up being the source and the reason for so much killing?
Yeah, well, I hear that question a lot, and those religions are just to get us started off on the right foot. And there'll probably be some changes here in the next several hundred years that have us, you know, all get together into one religion or realizing what's really going on, and we won't need a religion anymore.
Now, you know, people are pretty. They really are, and I think you would agree with this. People are pretty tenacious about their religious beliefs, those who are religious, and they get really upset when those get challenged. But you see that coming to an end?
Yeah, I think so. When people realize, that we're here to learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, and it doesn't depend on, of course, there's a higher entity, but it's different than what people think. So one of the reasons I don't get into religious discussions is just exactly what you say. People are so tenacious, and that's what causes the major wars of what's going on this planet is religion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get into that discussion, but basically we're here to learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And when we learn that, then we go off and we get to play with the other adults in the solar system and the universe.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I had a quick question for John.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll just ask it real quick and then hang up. John, do you have any idea what that loud, mysterious radio noise is that scientists just picked up in the universe? Thanks.
Did he say a loud?
Yeah, there's a very, very strong radio signal that has been picked up. As a matter of fact, I think it was on the 9th that was reported. It's 6 times louder than all other radio signals in the universe put together.
Yeah.
Any ideas?
I didn't read about it, and I really don't have a comment about it. It's probably just more BS from NASA.
You know, I have a very difficult time believing even in the Big Bang theory. And the reason that I have a problem with that, and so much of science and space science is based on a belief in this Big Bang theory and then the theories of relativity and the special theory of relativity. But the reason
you're 100% correct there, the Big Bang is BS. It never happened.
Mm-hmm.
The universe isn't 17 billion years old. It's infinite billion years old. Yeah, it's infinite old, and it's infinite in size. So once you can grasp that, then you're on your way. But there was no Big Bang.
Well, yeah, you know, they teach you, even in junior high, that there was a time when people were unsophisticated and just really didn't know, and they believed in something called spontaneous generation. And you throw a rag down in the cellar and throw some wheat on it, and it makes mice. Well, that was spontaneous generation, and they laugh at that and yet rely upon it for the beginnings of the universe. That from nothing there was something that exploded, but you know, Billy Preston got it right. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing. If you've got nothing, a nothing cannot explode.
100% right. I remember hearing that the universe was once the size of a golf ball. It's all BS.
All right, now, that being the case, then, there have to be civilizations out there that are multi-billions of years old. I mean, like, maybe 10 billion years ahead of us. Would that be correct?
Yes. The human mind can't even conceive of how much is out there. I mean, you know, there's more than 10 dimensions. There's more than 20 dimensions. There's places like Earth. There's billions upon billions of planets identical to Earth, but in different states of development, some less developed than us, some more developed than us. But it's so big that the human mind could not really not grasp it. I've tried to at times think about it, how big it is, but the human mind has been so used to being, you know, the universe is 17 billion years old, and the Earth is 5 billion, and da-da-da-da-da. That's not true. Everything is infinitely older than we can imagine.
All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi. Sorry, Kevin. Better than again on a second call of the evening, taking time of other people. So I'll make it real quick. I know he missed the question I asked him about the extended moon missions that I've seen in some website. I can't remember exactly where it was, but most of the moon missions that have taken place over the years in secrecy have taken place, and the destination was the backside of the moon. And I asked him if he could explain a little bit about that. But before I take his answer off there, Kevin, I realize where these people are coming from that are attacking you. It's from that backwards-turning part of the universe there, buddy.
Yeah, it might be. It just might be. Thanks for the call. All right. What about this? He's referring to what is alleged to be a secret space program, and that these secret missions were flown to the backside of the moon. Any credibility to those stories?
No, that's that Apollo 19 and Apollo 20 stuff. And what now? What NASA is trying to do is float a bunch of different ideas like that to give credibility to the early Apollo missions. Like, oh yeah, we went, but it's what we found that we're trying to cover up. And now they have these guys. I think one's from Africa, or one lives in Africa. He was on Apollo 20, and they found a giant spaceship on that crater Fermi, which is next to Tsiolkovsky, and just lately we've been seeing, as a matter of fact, tonight I've been seeing pictures of astronauts standing in front of great big concrete constructions on the moon. It's all stuff that NASA is floating there for us to give credibility back to the Apollo missions. The Apollo missions didn't go, but now what they're trying to do is give them more credibility.
The one that you're referring to, actually, he claimed to be living in Rwanda.
Yeah.
We have been able to trace not him, but those posts on the internet back to a Frenchman. And I have tried to be in touch with him. He will not answer emails. The same thing is true of a movie producer that has tried to be in touch with him, and he will not answer any emails. But we have the name, the email addresses, and as a matter of fact, the street address. But it goes back to this person in France.
Good. Well, when you get a hold of them, Kevin, I want to know where they launched from.
The story is they launched from Vandenberg.
That's pretty tough to believe, don't you think, a Saturn V from Vandenberg?
Well, I don't know. I don't know Vandenberg. I do know that Vandenberg launches has more launches than Cape Canaveral.
Right, but not in 1976 or whenever it was.
Yeah, well, I find the video difficult to buy. And in fact, you know, there is a video that purports to be from Apollo 11, where they're going through these ruins on the moon.
Yeah, I remember.
And I did a critique of that, and I showed just watch the camera movement here. You could not do that if you were carrying this camera. And then also I checked on the type of camera that they had available to them during the Apollo 11 missions, and they simply didn't have a camera that could have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned the Vandenberg and the launches. You know, a lot of those launches are astronauts. Of the there's four types of rockets now that take men to orbit, take astronauts to orbit. Let me ask you this. How many astronauts do you think are current qualified in the United States today?
I don't know.
Take a wild guess.
Qualified to fly now, right?
Right.
I'm guessing 200.
There's 5,000, and they're under the U.S. Space Command. And what they do is they service and operate the 8 to 12 orbiting weapon satellites that we got, which were part of the secret space program that started in the 60s. And that's what the Russian and the Apollo missions were a cover for these other missions, for building these weaponized space platforms. Now, the thing that tipped me off on this was that, you know, for 1980, so 90, almost 29 years now, we've been watching the shuttle go up and chase the International Space Station. So, you know, I'm wondering, it always takes 3 days to catch up with it. Well, I'm just sorry to say that it's taken me so long to catch up with it, but last September I got to thinking, now wait a minute, how can it have taken us 30 years for this space shuttle that has 43 separate engines on it to always have to take 3 days or almost 72 hours to catch up with the International Space Station? So then I started floating that idea around on the Internet and doing some other research, and we found out what the space shuttle is doing is when it takes off, what it's taking is food, supplies, fresh fruit to the other satellite, the weaponized space platforms. There's about 12 of them. And they land at one, unload some stuff, go to the next one, unload some stuff, go to the next one, unload some stuff, until they get to the ISS. Meanwhile, we're told, the public is told, oh yeah, they open the space pipe, space doors, and they're doing a checklist, and they gotta let it cool down. Well, that's all BS. What we're doing is we're, you know, what I said is taking supplies to those other space platforms. Now, what happens is when they get to the International Space Station, they spend about 10 days up there with doing the stuff they need to come and do up there. And when they deorbit, it should take 54 minutes to deorbit and land at Kennedy. But you know how long it takes? Yeah, it takes from between 48 and 60 hours. And you ask anybody at NASA what they're doing, oh, they have to get a rest period. They require 2 8-hour rest periods after all that work on the International Space Station. And then they have all the checklists to do. That's BS. What they're doing between that 48 and 68 hours is supplying the space stations. And you ask me, well, where did they get all the stuff? Well, it just seems that by an enormous coincidence, every time the shuttle goes up to the International Space Station, two Russian Progress rockets have gotten there the previous day. And what they do is they unload all the food and supplies and equipment from those Progress rockets, transfer it to the shuttle, and the shuttle transfers it when they undock from the International Space Station, and they go back down the line of all these other weaponized platforms.
How sure are you of that?
Pardon?
How sure are you of that?
150%. As a matter of fact, everything that I'm saying, you can go to thelivingmoon.com and see the stuff that we have come up with. In other words, we'll show you the manifests that are on the Russian Progress rockets that are going to the shuttle, because the people that are up at the International Space Station couldn't possibly eat that much food or consume that much fruit in the amount of days that they have to. You know, you can't store fruit. You have to eat it immediately. So anybody interested in that, take a look on thelivingmoon.com. And, of course, one of those weaponized platforms is what destroyed the World Trade Center.
John, we have to take a break. We'll get into that when we come back. And folks, don't go away. More with John Lear right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, John Lear. Now, John, you said you're 150% certain that the space shuttle has been going up and resupplying these orbiting space platforms. And that there are 5,000 astronauts in that program.
Right. You can look at that up on livingmoon.com for the look under U.S. Space Command and find out all the different agencies that have astronauts. There's Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, NASA, and they have their own all have their own set of astronauts.
You know, back, I think it was in the year 2000, it might have been the year 2001, I went to the website of the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command. At that time, on their website, they had a list of their astronauts, and they had the name of the commander of those astronauts, and they had an online application for Army personnel that wanted to get into that astronaut program.
Right.
I don't believe that's on their website anymore, but it used to be. And I talked about it on the show. But you've also got the U.S. Air Force Space Command. And who else has one?
Navy. Navy is now merged with the Air Force. All of them are under U.S. Space Command now.
Okay. Do they still list the astronauts on there?
The number, but, you know, no names or anything. But they list, the, you know, how many there are.
All right, 5,000. Now, that would indicate that it's a rather vigorous space program.
Yeah, we've got a rather vigorous space program.
Do we have vehicles that can take off and that are capable, at least in speed, of flying to the moon? Just take off from, you know, like an airplane.
That's what I heard, but I'm not sure about that anymore.
Do you think that
the reason I brought up the number of astronauts is because you started talking about Vandenberg and how many launches there were out of Vandenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the reason that Vandenberg gives for all those launches is, you know, secret satellite or secret monitoring. Well, if that's true, then we've got about 10,000 of those up there. But the fact is it's not true. What we're doing is we're launching astronauts because the shuttle can't take that many. The shuttle was designed to take 10, and we're always shown like 7. So there's always 3 or more secret astronauts going up in the shuttle, but they need many, many more. And they go up in the man-qualified or man-approved rockets out of Vandenberg.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Steve in Fort Worth.
Hi, Steve.
I was just going to ask John. I was curious because I kind of grew up in the space age in the 60s, and I remember as a kid that a lot of astronaut-type people would come around to my school, and one particular experiment that I remember was that they had placed some laser reflector scopes on the moon during the Apollo 11, 12, and 13 missions that actually reflected lasers from the Earth to the moon and back, and the data was accumulated then, and it's still accumulated today, and if we didn't go to the moon, how did those reflector scopes get on there? And
good
one
question.
Other comment was that, you know, recently with Edgar Mitchell emphatically confessing that we did, in fact, go to the moon, I have to say that I kind of raise his testimony above Mr. Lear's suppositions. And
all right, well, let's see what he's got to say about that. What about that, John?
Well, number one, the reflectors. I hear that a lot of time brought that up, and there's any number of ways they could have taken those up. The Russians certainly had equipment that could take and leave stuff up there. in the early 60s. We certainly learned how to do that too. So that's how the reflectors could have been there, been put there. As far as Edgar Mitchell says, all of those astronauts went under some extremely sophisticated mind control, and every one of them, not just Edgar Mitchell, every one of them would swear to God that they had gone to the moon.
All right, Steve, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. Let me ask you this, and John, we'll get you to respond to this too, but Steve, have you heard that when every one of the astronauts who was supposed to have walked on the moon, when they were asked, well, what went through your mind at that time? What did it feel like? Every one of them has said they really can't remember what it felt like. Had you heard that?
Kind of like your first kiss, you know? It happens so fast you can't remember what happened.
I remember.
But it's so exciting, and the excitement of the moment, it just brings a euphoria, I believe, that it's just beyond... It's beyond explanation. It's something that's just beyond.
Yeah, but see, they don't say that. They say they can't remember.
That's my viewpoint. I have to believe that, like I say, growing up in that era, I grew up, my father worked at Pratt & Whitney during the 60s. They worked on some rocketry that was part of the lunar module. I was all into the lunar program, and in my mind, there is just no question about it that we landed on the moon. They're just our flags there, and we were the first ones. And that's
okay. Fair enough. Thanks for the call.
You bet.
Kevin, he's what we call an Apollo hugger, and I was an Apollo hugger too. Now, let me quote from the book Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, which was written by Richard C. Hoagland and Mike Barra, and I'm quoting from the book. In his autobiographical second book, Return to Earth, Buzz Aldrin recounts an experience he had during an interview in the early 70s. While speaking at the local Kiwanis Club in Palmdale, California, Aldrin was asked a simple question: what did it feel like to be on the moon? Almost immediately, Aldrin was overcome with a panic attack, and the harder he tried to remember, the worse it got. Finally, he was forced to abandon the interview and rush from the stage, followed by his then-wife, Joan. In the alleyway behind the club, he became physically, violently ill. Aldrin continued his struggle with his inability to remember certain parts of the Apollo mission right up until recent years. In a 1999 interview with Salon Inc., he put it this way: "I try to answer," he admits wearily. "I say it felt terrific, tremendously satisfying. The mission was going well, and our training had prepared us perfectly. But then people say, no, how did it feel? How did it really feel?" And Aldrin says, "For Christ's sake, I don't know. I just don't know. I've been frustrated since the day I left the moon by that question." And most astronauts have that same response. So the caller saying that, you know, he can't believe it, well, the fact is that's true.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. It's Mike in Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
John, long time no see, John. Last time I saw you was in Norrie Ohio College seminar out in Rachel in 93.
Yeah.
How you been?
Yep, I'm here.
Yep, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I do. I want to know about this U.S. Space Command, because, you know, I've discussed it with you before, Kevin, and there are reports that we fly fighter craft, if you would, fighter-type aircraft, off of stations out there and patrol the space between the Earth and the Moon. What do you think about that?
Okay, John, what do you think about that? He said he thinks that we do indeed fly fighter-type aircraft, but they're spacecraft, in space and patrol the space between the Earth and the Moon, and he wants you to comment on that.
I heard that, and I was a proponent at one time because my sources said, yes, we did have fighter type aircraft that could take off from normal runways and fly to the moon. But since I found out we never went to the moon, those fighter type aircraft may take off and go to low Earth orbit, but they don't go to the moon.
Okay. All right, Mike, what do you think?
It's my understanding that we have like giant hangar stations up there where, like he was saying, they were supplying them with supplies, the shuttle maybe, but that they were flying in and out of those hangars and doing space patrols and coming back.
All right, now when you say we have hangars up there, where are you talking about?
In orbit.
In orbit.
Big devices up there that act as hangars for these things.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
You bet.
Kevin, there's a lot of stuff flying around that we don't know and I don't know about. One of the most interesting ones that I heard is about maybe 5-6 years ago, a guy called me from, I believe it was, Ireland, and he was working on working on poles. And he saw an airplane go over, and this is how he described it, and he drew me an excellent picture of the thing. But it was a delta-wing aircraft, and he said it was 10 times the size of a 747. It was white, and it took 7 seconds to get overhead where he was looking to the horizon, which means it was going very, very fast, and it was very, very large. Now, he said this didn't look like, you know, any type of advanced spacecraft. This looked like, you know, something that we built.
7 seconds. Now, in most places, the horizon is how far away? 19 miles, 20 miles?
Yeah, a long ways away.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's booking it. That's moving. We talked a little bit about faster than light and the possibility of something traveling faster than light. Is that possible?
Yeah, the things that Barry Spalter, in order to discredit Einstein and his theories, the three things that go faster than light that she proposes is the Cherenkov effect and the anti-mesons and the superluminals, which are the things that are way, way out in space. Now, the Cherenkov effect is the effect that turns the air blue when radiation hits it. Now, one of the photos that we have on thelivingmoon.com is on what we believe to be a fusion reactor where our Aristarchus should be. If you're looking at a full moon, it will be on the left-hand side about 10 o'clock. And that is a very bright, bright white spot that that NASA's attempt to airbrush white on every single picture. But a few years ago, we had a picture taken by a professional photographer in England with a 10-inch scope that shows a picture of the moon much, much clearer, much, much better, and in color that we posted on thelivingmoon.com. And if you enlarge Aristarchus, you will see it's not a crater at all. It looks like a six-sided domed fusion reactor, and we say reactor because it's light blue. And we're assuming that the radiation effect of the reactor turn the air blue.
All right, we have a break coming up now, and we'll be back more with John Lear after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. John, I'm sure that it's no surprise to you if I tell you that this show has not been without some outside interference, technically speaking. We have been able to continue broadcasting, but I've been very busy keeping us afloat here. That does happen from time to time, especially with hot topics. You stopped talking about this whole thing with UFOs and moon bases and all of that stuff. You quit for about 10 years and then decided that you would begin to talk about it. Yeah, why did you quit talking about it?
My daughter got in a very suspicious auto accident in North Carolina, and a few things lined up that made me think that somebody was trying to tell me something. But after thinking about it for 10 years, I decided, well, maybe not. Maybe I'll try it again. And so I tried it, and then nothing has happened to me yet.
So maybe maybe it was not connected.
Maybe it was not connected, but, boy, I'll tell you one thing. I sure thought it was at that time.
Yeah. Strange things happen to this show and have since the early days. Sometimes we've been able to trace it, and sometimes we've not been able to trace it, but strange things happen. One of the things that happens is just having the phones go dead. And that does happen from time to time, but that hasn't been the case tonight. Now, specifically about this speed of light thing that I was talking about, I know that this book talks about three things that are faster than the speed of light, but I'm talking about, is it possible for us now, do we have propulsion systems that can fly at or near the speed of light?
I doubt it very much.
Do you think we ever will?
Probably.
You know, I have questions about whether that's even necessary. I'm not really sure that it's necessary to fly faster than, or even to fly the speed of light. I'm not sure speed has anything to do with us traveling across great distances. And I could be wrong, but I would think that perhaps what would have more to do with it would be a change in our vibrational frequency some way.
Well, you're exactly right. When we, you know, we're talking about development that's not going to come in the next 100 years or 1,000 years, but when we get, when you get developed enough, you don't need ships to go anywhere. You just go there.
How do we go?
You mean the advanced beings?
Yeah.
I can't tell you the mechanics. All that I know is you can go instantaneously to places far, far away. You don't need propulsion or anything.
So it's more like going at the speed of thought.
Correct.
And thought is not necessary, doesn't depend really upon speed, and distance is not a big deal.
Right.
Do you think that we are far away from the days when, as you say, we'll be able to go out and play with the other adults in the universe?
Each person is different. We're not going to evolve all at the same time. In other words, that's why disclosure will never, ever happen. Not all of us are ready for disclosure. We all come here at different stages of development. Not everybody is ready for development at the same time. Each individual is responsible for his own life, and that is living his life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And when we pass away, for an instant, we're shown our lives, the good things we did, the bad things we did. There's no judgment made, and we're immediately put back into a newborn baby, and we live the life again. And we keep doing that until we learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. When we've learned that lesson, then we get to go out and play with the adults. But we don't all do that at the same time. We all learn at different rates, and people are coming to Earth, souls are coming to Earth that are new, that are old, that haven't been able to adapt, and this is a learning place.
I've heard that we are sort of an imprisoned race here. you view us more as the nursery school, I think.
It's both. We're a nursery school, and we're imprisoned with the Van Allen belt because they don't want us going out and spreading our, and I say that facetiously, spreading our kind of democracy to the local planet.
When you say our kind of democracy, what do you mean?
What's that?
When you say they don't want us spreading our kind of democracy out there, what do you mean by that?
That's a facetious reference to what we did in Iraq. Well, the only reason we went into, well, the reason we went into Iraq was threefold. Number one, we didn't want Saddam Hussein to start selling his oil for euros. Number two, we needed a base to attack Iran. And number three, we needed to steal some of their oil. Those are the only reasons we went there, but we said we were going there to, you know, start a democracy in the Middle East. And because George Bush was so stupid, he believed it. I mean, this was not his idea. Somebody sold him this idea that he would be the great, you know, president bringing Middle East to the, or democracy to the Middle East, you know, which was stupid. That's not the reason we went there, but that's the reason they told him we went there.
Well, now, do you have any inkling of an idea as to what sort of governmental system these other civilizations out there on the other planets may be operating under?
No, I don't.
Do you
all seem to get along?
One of the, I think, particular worries I have is if it's Borg, you know, like in like in Star Trek, you know, the Borg, where they all... there's no individuality, and they all think with one mind. That would be rather disturbing, I would think.
No, no. It's a lot of fun, Kevin. From what I've heard, it's a great place to be. And when we sort out our own personal problems here and we get out there, we'll be happy we spent the time to get out there.
And no, you have no idea, no estimate as to how long it will be before we make it.
Each person is different.
But I mean as a planet.
You ask, if you ask me personally, living my life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, I've got a few more lifetimes to go, only because there's so many assholes on Earth.
Do you think that the planet itself is going, as a whole, to reach a point where we're sort of welcomed into their civilization?
No, never happened.
So just individuals.
If it happens, it'll be a long, long time from now, because there's people that just starting out, learning how to live their life without envy, hate, or greed, and they're not learning. They're not even close to that. So they're going to be lifetimes, thousands of lifetimes, getting here and living their life until they understand that, hey, you got to be good.
Mm-hmm. So then individuals can graduate to those civilizations?
Pardon?
Are you saying that individual people can sort of graduate to those civilizations?
Yes. Yes, we can. We do it as individuals, not as a planet, not as a city, not as a not as any group. It all depends on us. It all starts with us. We're all responsible just for ourselves and our families. But when you wake up in the morning, just, you know, try to live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, and one day you're going to have a lot of fun.
So is graduating to one of those civilizations, is that what is being referred to when people say we're going to heaven?
Yeah.
Okay. We're out of time. I wish we had more. Tell you what, folks, I've enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it. John, stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.